Hey guys, it's RJ
and Angie,
and this is the Rich by Intention podcast.
Our guest today is Stephen Stack. Stephen is a financial coach whose mission is to help others build wealth holistically. He is 100% debt-free, which includes paying off a six-figure mortgage. He also became a millionaire by age 31. In this episode, we discuss the steps he took to become a millionaire by age 31, the foundation his family gave him, and the lessons he's teaching his daughter about money.
We hope you get a lot out of this episode. As always, thank you for tuning in to this episode. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button and be sure to follow us on Instagram.
Hey, Stephen, aka Stack
Motivation.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
Yeah. For those who may not know you, can you just tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
So, yeah, my name is Stephen Stack. I always like to tell people I'm a regular guy or an ordinary guy that's done some extraordinary things just through discipline and consistency over time. I'm a man of faith and a family and community man. So I really care about seeing the well-being of others around me increase. And I guess a little side note is that I'm also a millionaire and crossed that mark at age 31.
Whoa. Wow. I mean, you just said you're a regular guy. Regular guys don't become millionaires by the time they're... How old did you become a millionaire?
31.
31? Okay. So, you know, you are extraordinary.
Yeah, we got to get straight to the point right now. You just said millionaire all willy-nilly, right? And I remember that show, Who Wants to Become a Millionaire?
Yes.
So, like...
You had to answer how many questions? 100 questions just to get $1 million?
Yeah.
Right. I had to phone a friend.
Phone a friend, get a lifeline.
Well, we got you on, we're podcasting you so you can tell everybody how to become a millionaire. So tell us a little about that. How did you become a millionaire by 31?
So there's a lot of things that kind of went into it. Normally, I like to start my story by going back in time, talking about my family upbringing, because one thing you'll never hear me say is that I'm a self-made anything. I believe that I stand on the shoulders of everyone that came before me. And so I can even go back as far as my grandfather was born in 1897. He was literally the son of a slave. So his father was born in 1859 on a slave plantation. And so, like, when I think back to where things were and how he was the community person. He loved people. He loved his family and just took care of others. And like even, and I won't share this today, but like even the way he passed away, it was on the way to helping somebody. And so he died a couple of years before I was born. And yet, even though he didn't experience the material wealth in his lifetime that I've already been able to experience, man, the decisions that he made deeply impacted me, the way I see the world, and ultimately being able to build wealth. So like, that's why I say I always kind of start way back there to bring it forward of my parents, of learning, you know, learning and then teaching me and my siblings to live within our means, save for a rainy day, and try to avoid debt. Make sure it's something, like if you're buying something that you actually have the wherewithal to get it. So I didn't have like the savvy investing stuff going, but I did have a lot of the building blocks to get there even before I knew, you know, about different investment vehicles and things like that. And just because it's a couple, it's the two of y'all, I really wanted to say this, is that I feel that there's never been a day in my life where I didn't feel wealthy. And again, that wasn't tethered to material stuff. It was, I grew up in a household that was like rich in love and joy and peace, that just my heart was full.
So would you say it was rich by intention?
Hey, there we go. There we go.
No, so I want to like touch on that because I think what you're hitting on is like very important, right? Because so often we, you know, just connect, you know, being wealthy with the material. And I love that, you know, you talk about how your grandfather gave you this foundation even before you were born. Can you just talk about his influence on your life and what were the actual tangible things that he passed down to you that you think just gave you this foundation to become wealthy or become a millionaire by 31?
Yeah. So because he had passed before I got here, all I really had was the story. So my mom is kid number 12 out of 12. So I've got a massive family, which, by the way, my dad is number 10 out of 12. So you can imagine how many cousins, first cousins I have, let alone, you know, second and third. But the stories that I would hear about him, of just how he was so generous to others and that he would be wise about how he would manage like family resources and working with his wife, my grandmother, who she was actually born in 1900. I was alive enough to see her for a little bit before she passed. So like seeing some of those or hearing some of those dynamics of how they interacted with each other and their 12 kids getting to see that and how they, you know, made a dollar stretch, which is just another way of really saying budgeting. You know what I mean? And their contentment of how they approach life. So like that. Those were like massive things of impact for me of I live a very content life today. And I feel that I have for a really long time, which you can imagine when you start talking about delayed gratification, investing for tomorrow, how that can really, really, really add up to say, I'm happy with what I have. I'm not as concerned about what everybody else is doing.
I love that. My grandparents are a huge influence on me too. And I've had the privilege, I would say, of being able to be with them and see them and how they interacted together. So I really appreciate, you know, you just sharing, you know, the foundation that your grandfather gave you, because like I said, oftentimes we connect, you know, we think that we have to pass down material things to our children. And yeah, in some cases, you know, we want to pass on wealth. We want to make sure our kids, you know, go to school or college debt-free or minimally, right? Debt-free. But it's those intangible things that I think mean so much more, right? And really define your legacy. Your grandfather left a legacy. You know, the fact that, you know, he lives on through you just from the way that he lived his life, the way he interacted with your grandmother. That's kind of how I feel about my own grandfather as well, where I talk about him all the time because of the life that he lived, because of what he did for other people, because he was so generous with his time and giving to others. So that's awesome.
Yeah. And it just makes me think about, you know, a lot of times, as Angie said, like we think about passing on generational wealth, but it's also like generational values and generational mm-hmm. knowledge. Yep. And, you know, you said that, you know, the budgeting that, you know, he passed on. And it was two sets of parents, right, who had, you know, from their unions brought 22 children. And then with that came all of these values. Yeah. And you're like a direct benefactor of those values and of those choices that they made. So can you kind of talk about like those foundations that you were taught and how did that eventually lead to you becoming a millionaire?
Yeah, and from your parents too. Like what did your parents instill in you?
Yeah, yeah. So I'll kind of transition to my parents because a lot of the themes are the same of, and I think they'll be okay with me sharing this because I've heard them say this publicly to others, but I can remember my mom saying when they first got married. Now, granted, it's more money then than it is today, but when they started, they had about like $20 to their name. They got married in my grandparents' backyard. Like, if you want to talk about, you know, big fancy weddings, not so much. They used to sometimes have to air dry like paper towels to just try to save early, just to give you all a feel of, I guess, the stock that I come from, the people that I come from. But sincerely, my parents are easily the most generous people I have ever seen in my entire life. And just seeing it in practice of them taking people in, being hospitable. Like when I grew up, my house was always the place to be. So we had a pretty nice size backyard. Like even today, my dad will still cut the grass. And like someone that I used to go to high school with is like, yeah, your dad's grass, like it's always the best lawn in the neighborhood. But like we'd play football and tag and hide and go seek in the front and backyard, or play basketball in the driveway. And like when my friends would be over, like my mom would have like water and popsicles, and there was always like this candy jar. So everybody would always want to go in. And it was the good candy too, you know what I mean? So not like
not that cheap candy, right, Dollar right. Tree.
exactly. Not like the leftovers.
Not the candy they sell at Aldi's. Right. the generic right. brand.
Right.
It was
right.
the name brand candy, right?
Right. Not like the Halloween stuff that you just want to get rid of. Sorry, you know, shots fired to the people that love licorice. Not the greatest fan of it. But you know what I mean? So like it would be like the real stuff, like the fruit snacks and the blow pops and fruit roll-ups. You know what I mean? If I'm kind of going back, Gushers and all that. Bubblicious, bubblegum. You know what I mean? So like it was always like, hey, extending the best to others. And so like I got to witness that, like even they would talk about it, but more importantly, I saw it. You know what I mean? I got to witness it myself of just an incredible amount of generosity that they still do to this day. So yeah, that was a huge thing for me.
So you have this amazing family that has instilled great values in you, right? You know, but that doesn't always translate into becoming a millionaire by 31 for everybody, you know? Right. So can you talk to us about what were actually the tactics you used to become a millionaire in your early 30s?
Yeah. So what happened was I'm like, okay, I've got this budgeting thing down, elite at being able to save, you know, be disciplined. But while I was in college, like I'm sitting there and I'm like, yo, I was just doing the math. And shout out to Clemson University. That's my, you know, my alma mater. But I'm in Clemson and I'm sitting. I'm like, man, I'm running these numbers. I will never be able to save my way to wealth. And it just was painfully clear to me. Because in college, I'm like, you know, if I could put away $20,000 a year, which is a lot for a college student, I'm like, man, it would take me 50 years to get a million. I'm like, that ain't great. You know what I mean? Like, because I'm looking at it, I'm like, okay, you know, I'm somewhere between 18 and 21. You add 50 to it, it's a long time. So I'm like, man, there's got to be a better way to do this. And I know that people are investing, but I'm just not from that. So I don't know. I didn't know how. So I started to read and just to kind of give perspective, this would have been, you know, more-ish towards the early 2000s. So the internet was way different than what it is today. But so I'm like, okay, let me try to actually go to like the library, you know what I mean, or purchase a physical book and start to read about this stuff to try to get an understanding. And real estate made sense to me of, I'm like, people need a place to live, you know, so they're always going to have to pay for a place to stay. And I knew enough about the stock market of just kind of hearing about it to be dangerous. But when I was in school, real estate is where I started to really lean towards. I'm like, that's more tangible to me of putting money into a like something I can actually touch and feel and see, which today you would say, oh, you know, there's collateral against it. You know, there's actual physical property. And so that's kind of where I started, which it actually led into one of the worst investment decisions that I have made.
But before we go there, I'm just curious, because you're a college student. College yeah. students don't have any money to be investing in real estate, the stock market. You know, I remember when I was in college, I was working at Old Navy, making minimum wage. So like where were you getting this money to invest?
20,000 to save a year. Like,
yeah.
That's
right. Yeah. Can you just tell us more about that?
Right. Right. Yeah. Let me walk that back. So it wasn't like I was making 20 that I could put away, but I was just trying to figure out the math of what did I need to do to get there. But now what I will say, and people that went to school with me can vouch for this. Like, I had like a million jobs while I was in school, like a ton of them. So I think the accurate number is it was either 6 or 7 that I had, but I worked in the, I gave tours of the engineering building. So that was one job. I worked with student athletes. I worked in the performance arts center, like as far as like setting up plays and breaking them down. I would work football games, do like the concession, which, you know, there's a statute of limitations. Please, IRS, don't come see me. They paid us in cash. Okay. They did. It was $10 an hour to be there. The lady paid us in cash. I ain't going to say her name. I'll protect her. You know what I mean? Even though she probably ain't doing anything.
Protect the innocent.
Right, right. Exactly. So I would work games and like do concessions there. I did mentoring for minorities in science and engineering type majors and math and stuff, just STEM. And I know there was another gig that I did as well that I'm missing, but I think you get the drift. Like, had a lot of them spinning and they had a lot of flexibility.
So you had hustle, like you had like a hustler's mentality in college. Like, let me figure it out. Let me work. You had a strong work ethic, right?
Yes.
To kind of put you in a position where you could start investing in real estate.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, absolutely. Like, my mentality when I came to school is I'm like I heard people, they say, oh man, broke college student. I was like, man, I just don't believe that has to be true for me. I don't think I need to be broke. And I'm like, there's a lot of time that we have at school, which I still have fun. People know, you know, I pull up to the, you know, student union, you go bowl and shoot pool, whatever, you know what I mean? Like, hang out for, you know, different student gatherings. But I was also like, man, there's just a lot of time that I have once the school work is done. So let me get it.
And so, wait, what did you study in college again?
So I was an engineering major.
So how did you have time as an engineering major? I mean, you
working
had
six jobs in engineering.
And
you're playing pool.
And you're playing and still having a social life. But I think this is an important message, right, for young people, because a lot of times now with social media, everybody wants to be a quick millionaire. Like, they want the easy route to making millions, right? Mm-hmm. And so I just want to, like, if you can just give a message to young people, because, like, I mean, your story is a message in itself. But what do you say to that young person that wants to be like you and be a millionaire by 30? You know, like, what should they be doing in their early 20s to get there?
So I'm going to start with a non-monetary piece of advice first that many people skip over. Man, be mindful of who you lay with, talk to, however you want to put that. It really, really matters. Like, you can be making all of the right decisions, like as far as investment wise or money management wise, and a romantic relationship can push you sideways faster than anything, by far. So I know that may not be like the, oh, you know, A, B, C stuff of money, but like, it's extremely important. Just be mindful of it. Not saying, you know, people can do whatever they want to do, but I'm just like, at least know what comes with that. But then after that, focus on the process, not the end result. So focus on building good habits of, okay, I want to have a good work ethic. So oftentimes you'll hear people say, hey, work smarter, not harder. What I would say is, if you really want to build prodigious wealth, work smarter and harder, and you'll outpace almost everybody just by doing both. Because many won't do one.
Mm-hmm.
They won't work smart or work hard. If you do both, you have a much higher chance of succeeding, especially when you're young. You have a leg up on your peers, because most aren't trying to do either. And I can tell you, as you know, I don't think I'm an old person today, but maybe old to someone who's like 21 or 22, is people around my age and up, when I know when I see young people that are getting after it and have focus, I take notice and say, man, how can I help you accelerate? Because you're doing the right stuff. You just need some tweaks and some guidance.
I love it. I totally agree. Work smarter and work harder. That's good advice. You know, like developing that strong work ethic is so important early on. And so I want to like just go back to one of the things you were going to touch on. And that was one of the investment mistakes you made. So what was that? Because I can't imagine you made any mistakes becoming a millionaire by 31. But walk us through that.
So I had a friend and, you know, fellow student that was doing stuff with real estate. And he was telling me about this deal that was going to make some quick money. And so you got to think, like, I'm sitting back. I'm like, okay, you know, I've got the discipline. I've got some money to the side. And then I figured out, oh my gosh, it's going to take me forever to save my way there. So I need things to accelerate. So my mind was on the quick turn of the money versus how is it actually made and what's the viability of it. And so I had invested almost $2,000, which this is a lot of money for me at this time, into an investment that I was expecting would double like within a year. So I'm like, oh my goodness, man, this is going to be amazing. These are the kind of numbers I need in my life. But I didn't understand really anything about how it worked, like how the money would actually be made in the investment. Like I just kind of knew my part and it was some stuff that sounded good. But I was kind of doing that. Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. No, that makes sense. That makes sense. But really, I was like, yo, when is money going to double, was where my mind was at, instead of saying, hey, how does this work to make sure? Because the thing is, with an investment, you should be able to understand how all parties make money with whatever it is. Like, even if you're investing in a, you know, in it, whether it's an individual company in the stock market, an ETF, which is a collection of companies, or like an index fund, which kind of has a whole swath of companies combined. Ultimately, it's, hey, these companies provide a product or service. People pay for it. There's a benefit to the people who buy it, and the company, they have profit layered on top of whatever their cost is to provide that. And you have shareholders who have a, you know, ownership stake in said company or collection of companies. As they grow, so does your investment. And, you know, for certain companies, they may even pay a dividend. So they pay a portion of their profits to their shareholders. So that is a very simple way of looking at like the stock market. Or if we're talking about real estate, it's, hey, you own the property, you may have, you know, debt servicing or a loan on it, a mortgage loan, you've got property tax, you may have insurance, home insurance on it, and other different things. There are capital expenditures, which I don't want to sound fancy. It just means like stuff comes up, things break, and you have to repair those or fix them or replace them. But you charge an amount of rent that's enough to be able to pay for all of those things and still have money left over. And someone else lives there and they enjoy it. So I didn't have that kind of end-to-end understanding of what I invested in. I was just looking at, I'm about to double this money. Let's go. And you guys can guess, it didn't work out.
It didn't double.
It didn't double. It didn't double. No, it didn't. And the funds were gone. And it was enough of a painful experience. So it wasn't like huge, huge money in the big, big scheme of things. It was enough to be painful enough to say, man, I don't want to keep making this mistake. I need to actually understand what I'm investing in. And I would even say today, you know, moving towards what, like two decades later, it was one of the best investment lessons I ever learned. And if you told me, hey, I only got to pay $2,000 or $1,500 to learn that lesson, man, sign me up.
Yeah, I think a part of, you know, what I want to just take from that story is that sometimes you have to take action, right, in order to get that lesson. And so, you know, I know oftentimes we get into like this analysis paralysis and we want to know all the ins and outs, but sometimes just taking the action, a calculated risk, not just throwing all your life savings into an investment, but, you know, taking a few hundred to $1,000, whatever you feel comfortable losing, you know, to kind of learn, I think, you know, is valuable sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. And some people who have analysis by paralysis, is it takes them, you know, a decade to do it. And then by then they're like, hey, let me invest, you know, this $50,000 in this thing, and they have no idea what it is. And then it's hard for them to recover from that. So the taking the action early on, you learned for, you know, whenever that next opportunity came for you.
I was just going to say, before we move on, I want to just ask you, for young people who are listening today, people in their 20s, early 30s, who want to, you know, get on the trajectory to become millionaires, you know, what are some books that you would recommend to our audience to get them on that path?
So one of my favorites, that, and it's a pretty easy read. It's got a lot of data in it. So sorry for the people that may not love numbers, but I think you should love numbers if you want to build wealth, that it'll help you. You don't have to be a super numbers person, but, you know, it's just good to have a understanding. But I really like The Millionaire Next Door, which there is an updated version after 25 years from the original. I'd say read the updated one just because it's a little closer to now. The reason why I like it is gives a lot of information, a lot of data for what do millionaires do? How do they tend to spend their money, save, invest? Kind of what are their interests? What are things they lean towards versus not? And I can tell you from personal experience of being one of those millionaires that a lot of it's incredibly accurate information. Just from what I've seen, you know, I listened to it again the other day just via Audible while I was traveling, and it's just a lot of head nodding of like, yep, no, that's good, that's true. And the last thing I'll say of why I like the book is, if you wanted to be great at basketball, you would say, hey, let me study like LeBron or Steph or MJ, if you want to go to players that, you know, don't currently play, to see the best, versus saying, hey, let me follow someone who played, no disrespect, Division II basketball or something like that and rode the bench. Like, you want to study the best. So that's a really good resource. And I think it'll be encouraging of just letting people know it's possible.
We love that book too. That's one of the books that we read along our journey. And so we love it. We are like, it'll help to shift your mindset.
Yes.
Right? Because often we think about, you know, the millionaires are the ones like flossing, like driving the cars, living in the big houses, you know, designer stuff, you know, like, but it just shows you that anyone that you walk across that just looks like your everyday person could be that millionaire next door. Okay. So, you know, you've done great things, you know, at a very early age, and, you know, just the level of wealth that you were able to accumulate and, you know, just build that generational wealth for your children and for your family and for your overall legacy. You are starting to, you know, just have conversations with your children now about wealth.
And before we go, like, we left it off with the real estate, but I want to know the steps to the millionaire. Like, what, after you failed in your investment, what steps did you take to put you on the path to build the millionaire status?
Gotcha. Yeah. So I had the mistake, and it taught me to look at things differently going forward. And so I just tried to break it down to what was simple. So when I ended up coming out of school, which I'll try to be quick here with this, is I ended up graduating school during the Great Recession. So think that 08, 09 timeframe, coming out of college, I had already gotten it sealed in my mind randomly from a movie called Inside Man with Denzel Washington, where one of the characters said, when there's blood in the streets, buy property. And so I'm coming into a full-time role as an engineer. And I'm like, okay, I know enough from just kind of paying attention that there's blood in the streets, meaning that economically things are bad. It's peak housing market crisis, people's life savings and 401ks and work retirement, like we're getting like cut in half in value. You know what I mean? So I'm like, okay, if things are really bad, then I need to be buying assets. And so I started with doing flips. So, and just meaning, or doing rehab. So I would buy a property and mind you, I'd been working, putting money aside while I was in college. And then even when I became a pro, I was putting even more aside. Cause I'm like, hey, my nicest piece of furniture was a futon. So, hey, I don't really need a lot of fancy stuff. I'm going to keep my expenses low so I can have a lot of money built up. So I bought my first property, which is actually in Ohio. I was living there at that time. So I bought my first property and I, through a realtor friend that I'd actually met and got to know over time, but this guy like went to the church that I was attending. He helped me build a team of contractors to be able to pay to do the work for the flip. So like I was getting quotes for the work that I needed to be done for the property. It was not very clean and systemized. Like your boy was just, hey, I'm just taking action. We're going to see what happens, right? And so I did that, bought it, paid to have things be fixed up, and then was able to sell it for more than the acquisition and repair costs. And I actually did it again. And the thought process was I wanted to get chunks of money so I could start buying multifamily properties to rent out for the longer term. Because the thing with flips, no shade to that, is you don't get paid, like you don't make your money to the very end, like when the property is sold and done. And I'm like, yeah, I would like to get money steadily from rental income. So that's where I started on the real estate side, was there, and I understood it because it was just simple. I'm like, if I can add, subtract, multiply and add, multiply and divide, I can figure out whether this is profitable. And for people who are listening and saying, okay, well, you know, how did you know what to sell it for? So what I did is I got a professional, you can get a realtor, whomever, to do something called a CMA, a competitive market analysis, to see what would the property sell for relative to other homes in that area within like a mile or so. So I had a feel for, this is what I can sell it for. This is what I bought it for. This is roughly what I think the repair costs are going to be. This is how long I'm planning to hold it. So I wanted to sell it in 3 months, but I was prepared that I could make real money if it took me 7 or 8 months. Ended up selling it in 4. And made some mistakes, but long story short, I ended up making about $10,000 on that first one. But it was really the lessons that I learned from doing that I was able to take forward. So that's the real estate side, not the stock market side, which I was in there too.
If some of our listeners, you know, want to, you know, dabble into real estate, what resource do you recommend for them to start?
So yeah, it would depend on kind of what direction they want to go, of if they're wanting to do, because now there's so many different ways to do it, which is crazy. Like you can do long-term rentals, which think like traditional, like, you know, just people doing a one-year lease, to midterm, to short-term, which the most popular people would think like Airbnb.
Yeah.
So like there's literally so many different ways to do it. And there's so many different people talking about it now, like on YouTube and social media and, you know, all these different things. The biggest thing I would say is if you're going to connect with someone, make sure they actually made money doing it,
mm-hmm.
not talking about doing it.
Exactly. I love that.
Yeah.
Good so, advice.
Yeah.
So I want to just transition and just talk a little bit about the values that you're instilling into your own children. You know, you've written an ebook called Simple Money Talks, Conversations with My 8-Year-Old Daughter. Can you just share about like what that book is about?
Yeah. So what happened is I was playing a game of Monopoly with my daughter. At the time, she was 8 years old. We're playing, and I mean, I had an advantage. You know what I mean? I'm pretty good at the game, but I mean, shoot, I'm in my 30s. You know, and she's 8. You know, so, but we were playing, and I remember, like, she was just looking at me, and I actually talk about this in the book. I actually wrote about this Monopoly game, but there's a moment where she's laughing at me because she's like, man, you barely have any money. All I got is these property cards, you know what I mean, that I kind of keep racking up or putting homes and hotels on these properties to be able to build my rent. And she ended up landing on the Boardwalk, which I owned it. And literally, like, I saw the stress come on her face in real time. She's like, oh my gosh, like, this is so much money that I'm gonna have to pay you. And like, man, like, it, like, I literally saw her like stressing, like, real grown adult problems.
Like, dang, right. Daddy. You gotta take all my money.
right. Because she had landed on other properties that I had before, but it's like, ah, yeah, here's you know, your $100 to it, whatever.
$200 Boardwalk. It's like, I don't know, $1,500 or how
right.
much
it was,
is it?
You gotta give you Orient's. Yeah.
Right. It was like a four-figure amount. You know, you get $200 to pass go. So it's like, ah, you know, $100, whatever. You know, I just get it when I roll it. You know, roll
something,
these dice.
Something light, right?
Like, right. You know, just some light work, you know. So, but when she landed on that, she's like, oh my gosh, I don't have any money. And like, literally, I was looking at her and I'm like, man, I have worked with people that are making the exact same face and are saying the same words. And the unfortunate part is we're playing a game, but they're talking about real life. And so in that moment, I said, man, what if I just wrote a book about our money conversations, the conversations that I just have with my daughter on a regular basis, whether it's going to the grocery store or intentionally taking her with me to the bank or just everyday life stuff or going to a kid birthday party and figuring out what's the gift we're going to get or what's the thing that we're going to do. And I'm like, man, I think that people could benefit from that because the majority of people had those conversations when they were growing up of just intentional talk around it and not, you know, like super heavy, but just intentional. And so that's where I came up with the idea. And I purposely wanted to incorporate her into it to shatter any kind of a glass ceiling of what was possible. Cause it's like, hey, you're 8 years old and now you're an author. You're my favorite co-author in the world. So that was the thought behind it, was from a place of love for her, but then also for others of, hey, if you've ever been intimidated by talking about money, well, what if you just heard conversations to an 8 year old about it? And that it doesn't have to be as intimidating. So there's a, you know, a few stories in there of things that actually happen. And then I give a breakdown of what was the purpose of that conversation in the book. So, you know, it's been pretty encouraging for the people that have gotten a chance to read it. And I try to give people ideas of how to have those conversations, whether it be with their own kids, but even if you don't have kids, like, you may have nieces and nephews. It don't think they got to be younger than you. It could be brothers and sisters. It could be your parents. They may be, you know, age-wise older, but financially you may be more mature than they are. But just ways to make it not feel so intimidating or even condescending, just right where people are at.
It's so great that one, that you used a game to open up that conversation with your daughter. And I think it's so important to, you know, like you said, keep the conversations light, kind of use your everyday life to be a lesson for your children when it comes to money. And so I love that, you know, you're bringing her along the journey and you're opening up a world of limitless possibilities for her. You know, oftentimes when we're young, you know, we can take on those limiting beliefs, you know, from our parents, from our grandparents, from family members, friends. But, you know, the fact that you decided to write this ebook with your daughter to just show her, you know, the limitless possibilities that are available to her, I think is wonderful. And yeah, talking about money at an early age is so important.
Yeah, yeah. Because most people, if you talk to, they say, did your parents ever talk to you about money? They say no. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's important for us as parents to have those conversations early and often so we can normalize it and put our children in the best place to succeed. So awesome job.
Yeah. So for those that, you know, want to learn more about your ebook with your daughter, for those that just want to keep up with you, where can they find more about Stephen, aka Stack?
I love the coordination with the Stack. That's awesome. So first, you could find me. My website is just Stephen with a V, lstack.com. So STEVENLSTACK.com. So that's one way to just be able to find me. Others are on social media, which I'm probably most active on Instagram or IG. My handle is just at Stacking with Stack. So STACKING with Stack. Same handle if you're on Facebook, same for TikTok. For Twitter, I have Stephen L. Stack. Maybe I should change it to make it all Stacking with Stack. But yeah, those are ways to be able to find me. I always have to give this disclaimer, especially for IG. I'll never solicit you for money. I'm not going to ask you how your crypto trading is going, because there's a lot of scammers and things like that out there. So I think it's just be mindful. If it doesn't sound like me or what you're hearing in this interview, it probably isn't me. So yeah, but those are ways to be able to connect with me. And I actually do respond. You know, I'll get back to people in DMs and engaging with people, you know, on social media and posting things like that.
Perfect. Perfect. Thanks so much, Stack, for coming on this podcast, sharing your story, sharing your tips, and just sharing, you know, how you became a millionaire at 31. So we really appreciate you for coming on and wish you nothing but success and more millions.
Appreciate it. Thank you for having me. For real, man. I love what y'all are doing. This is awesome. For real.
Thank you for tuning into this episode. If you like what you heard, hit the subscribe button and leave a review. Follow us on Instagram at Rich by Intention for money tips and inspiration.